Over 4 million people resigned from their jobs in September. And this builds on nearly that many in August, and we don't have the October numbers, but it's probably still a very high number. People are dubbing this the Great Resignation, as people just leave their work. And one of the reasons is obviously the pandemic, the concern people have for their health, the frustration over their employers' mandates, or just the ever-changing seas that employees have to go through. I think about teachers this week and sort of the curveball that was thrown them with one more abrupt change. And I think many are just saying, I just don't want to deal with all of this constant stress. Others are resigning because they can't find steady daycare. Now, we have a child care at the church, and we know the difficulty in employing people as well as having to follow the protocols and quarantining and so forth. And so for many, they're just saying, it's not worth it. I can't find child care. But there's another group, and this is perhaps most interesting to me, and that is that there are many, no, I think all of us after the last 20 months are starting to ask ourselves some big questions. Some questions like, what am I doing here? Do I make a difference with what I do on a daily basis? And does it really even matter if I make a difference? Again, I think there's some real deep questions that we're asking ourselves, and for many, that's leading them to say that they no longer want to work where they are. We've been confronted with our own mortality. We've had prolonged periods of isolation and separation. We've had economic chaos and just political insanity, to put it nicely. And many of this, it bears itself out in our own families, in our own lives, where once solid relationships now seem divided by how we feel about what's going on in this world. And so, again, on any level, we've had something profoundly disruptive in our lives. And, well, it turns out, though, that Jesus also talks today about something that is profoundly disruptive, that would be a once-in-a-generation, once-in-a-century sort of change for people. And he points out, he predicts, he prophesies the destruction of the ancient temple. This was, for the ancient Jews, including for Jesus, this was sort of the center of the world, the ancient temple. By Jesus' day, it had stood for over 500 years. And it stood on the place where before that Solomon's temple had stood for nearly 500 years. It was the center of life there, and there was this sense that God's presence dwelt there. And inside of the temple, there was a room called the Holy of the Holies, and only one day a year, one person, the high priest, could go in. So mighty and so intense was the presence of God there. And on that day, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the high priest would make atonement for the sins of the people. The temple was the place where the Hanukkah miracle happens, of 8 days of the lamp not going out. It's the place where Jesus overturns the money tables and gets himself really in trouble. That's what launches really the proceedings against him. And it's when Jesus dies that the temple curtain is torn in two. Again, in every aspect of early Jewish life, the temple was the center economically, culturally, religiously, spiritually, politically, and so forth. And Jesus says that not one stone of this is going to be laid upon another stone, that this foundation of their life is going to go away. It's a reminder that other Christians in other times and in other places have endured cataclysmic events that have disrupted every aspect of their life. We're not the first. We won't be the last. Again, part of the way that the world works is that there are these cataclysmic events that shake and disrupt, cause us to reassess. But I think for many of us, 20 months in, we're not really interested right now in resigning. We've done that already. I think for many of us, we're interested in recalibrating and rebuilding. I think we want to move ahead with our lives. But this is proving most difficult because the normal thing that we want to do then is go back to the way that it was. And I think in 2021, we've all sort of put on our 2019 pants and realized they didn't quite fit the right way. Hopefully they were looser and not too tight. But I mean, metaphorically, right, we've all realized that we can't go back to the way life was. Too much has changed in our families, in our world, in our communities, in our church. Again, we want to go back to the old normal, but it just doesn't quite work. And we realize that so much has been disrupted that we, again, need to start a little bit earlier, start a little bit lower, and to rebuild. So is there any guidance, any hope, any direction we could have for how we shall move ahead, how we shall raise up, how we shall rebuild? Well, admittedly, Jesus talks a great deal about destruction as this preparation for the age of fulfillment, for the fullness of God's kingdom to come. But in the midst of it, there's a little hidden phrase that he says, and it's hidden because it's just hard to translate. But what Jesus says in the middle of all of this today, when he's talking about the fact that there will be no stone left upon another, he says a curious thing, and he refers to a stone that will never be destroyed. That's what he literally says. There's a stone that will never be destroyed. And it's this curious thing, and so it got me thinking, you know, what is Jesus talking about here? Well, it turns out that right the chapter before in Mark's gospel, which probably takes place the day before, Jesus is having an argument. And in that argument, he tells these leaders, he quotes to them from Psalm 118. And he quotes this ancient prayer, and he says to them, "The stone that the builders have rejected has become the cornerstone. This is the Lord's doing." Again, Jesus quotes to them from Psalm 118. He says, "The stone that the builders has rejected has become the cornerstone." It turns out that one verse is the most cited Old Testament verse in the New Testament. Again, all the great stuff, that is it. That is the most cited verse. And why is that? Because the early Christians began to realize that, yes, the temple and other things would fall away, but Christ was their sure foundation. Again, early Christians began to hear this ancient prayer anew and realize that although so much of life will fade away in the storms, will be knocked down by the earthquakes, that the sure foundation, the one that can never be destroyed, is Jesus Christ, his teachings, his death, and his resurrection for you and me. And upon this, we can rebuild always. Now, I suppose I could end my sermon here, right? I mean, life is proven that it's been disruptive, and so as we're seeking to rebuild, we have to rebuild on Jesus. That seems like a pretty good thing so far. But it sort of begs the question, well, what does it actually mean to build on Christ? Right, Pastor, this sounds good. I want to do that. Well, what does that mean? Well, I can't quite give you a real easy or simple answer to that because that's really the sum of what we do here at church. The sum of what we do is to try to help us understand and to put into practice building on Christ. This is the week in, week out pattern of worship, of faith formation, of serving others that we do here. It would be a sermon series at the least. But I'll then just offer sort of one, perhaps, insight into how we would go about building on Christ. And it's really a word of warning to us. Like I said earlier, in the first century, the temple was the thing that was considered holy in society. And when it first was built, God ordered it to be built. And God blessed the building of it. And again, there was the Hanukkah miracle there. And there was never any sense that the high priests weren't doing the job of finding forgiveness for the people. But somehow along the way, this temple building became problematic. In fact, in Jesus' day, it's King Herod, who doesn't really fear the Lord, doesn't really worship the God. He decides he's going to make the temple bigger. And he's going to sort of make it his own temple. He's going to expand it so he can go down as the ruler who built the temple bigger. The temple had been co-opted for other purposes. It had become corrupt. That which, again, was at one point good and holy and God-blessed had been built astray. This can happen in our lives, too. In fact, very easily. We can start out with a professional endeavor, a relationship, a project, a church, where we have this great hope. And we even sense that God is calling us into this, and we start to build. But along the way, we don't do it right. And sin creeps into ourselves and the actions of others. And then something comes along like a pandemic, and we realize that that which we had built was not built on as sure of a foundation as we thought. It's really easy for us, even as good people, even as people who want to do the right thing, to build incorrectly our lives. Jesus offers us a real word of warning today, that even the great temple fell, and just in the same way, our great projects, if they're not based on God, will fail too. And what we discover, though, is that when we build incorrectly and we don't build on Christ, inevitably, sort of the big bad wolf of life blows and huffs and puffs, and it seems to fall apart. But what we discover then is that there was one stone that remained, and that was the stone that was Jesus Christ, the one who can't be moved. To sort of bring it maybe together with a little bit of concrete words here. This holiday season, there's going to be a tremendous amount of pressure on all of us to go back to the way it was. And I think for me personally, there are certain foods I didn't get to eat last year at Thanksgiving that I'm very excited this year to eat. I'm sure you are as well. Certain people at a table, again, I think there's a hunger we all have for a bit of normalcy, a bit of the routine. But I want to give you some permission this year. I want to give you some permission that you don't have to worship the God of 2019. And that as we do this holiday, not just Thanksgiving, but move into Advent and to Christmas, as we move into these, again, we don't need to worship the God of 2019. But we can ask ourselves as we seek to rebuild, what would Christ have me do? What way of rebuilding is Christ calling me towards? For again, it is Him and Him alone who is the sure foundation of our life. Amen.